make some coffee. So,
I'll bring two cups.
Who is here from the library?
One for Aaron and one for
Mark. Oh, okay. All right.
Still going to this issue. What is it about?
I'm sorry to pick up the phone. All right, we'll call the meeting to order. The first item on the agenda is consideration of the county library system. And if you would like to step up and introduce yourself, we're used to Mr. Baker appearing, but we're happy to see you this evening.
Doug Baker actually retired as of June, and so I'm Lynn Swartz Truesdell, the interim director of the Scotia Public Library and the Scotia County Library System.
Well, welcome to the meeting.
Thank you.
We're at 375 for committee members' benefit of the budget vote. I'll turn the meeting over to you for your presentation.
Basically, we are asking the county for $1,394,128, which is a 2% decrease over last year. That basically covers the non-resident use of the libraries, the public library and the county, the community library, by all the residents of the county who don't pay to support the two libraries. And then we are also with other monies that do funnel through the county, which is the state money, and Lakeshore's library system reimbursing to us. We'll be creating some funds to pay for our automation system, our computer network, and to put together some funds for digital resources that we can buy cooperatively.
All right, thank you. And discussion from committee. Just as a reminder to the committee, this is only a tax to those who do not participate in the regular city system.
City and the community.
Yes. Discussion? Bill?
Just on a related topic, you mentioned that you're the interim head
yes.
of library system. How does it work from a succession standpoint as to how the new director is chosen? So can you just enlighten the committee?
We actually have, we're in our second posting for that position.
Okay.
There was, it was posted right after Doug retired. And they did interview a person, and they decided not to hire that person, so they just posted it again.
Okay.
And we're hoping to get someone on board by the first part of January. I'm the assistant library director.
Okay.
So I'm there and can help anybody who comes on board. Doug, actually, I worked really closely with him, so
okay.
all of the planning for this he and I did together. So I think the transition will be pretty smooth.
So the hiring, if I understand correctly, is reviewed by the library board?
Yeah,
is that how it works?
The board actually hires the director. Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any further discussion? If not, Chair would entertain a motion for tentative approval.
I'll move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion on the motion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. And just again, for the benefit of those who might not have been here last evening, these are tentative approvals, and we do finalization at the last meeting. Thank you. And you're certainly welcome to come back.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll move on to the next item, which is the district attorney and victim witness. And Bob Zaffer, district attorney, will do the presentation with the office manager.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bob Zaff, and I'd like to introduce our new office manager. This is the first budget review before your committee, and I said this before law enforcement and judiciary. He's in panic mode just because he hasn't met all of you and tonight's your first appearance in the committee. And so I defer all the tough questions to her,
all
so
right.
she's prepared to answer them. She does most of the budget management in our office. and I prepared a little bit of a cheat sheet checklist for you, if you will. She will distribute that, and it, what it does is highlight the revenue and the expenses, and highlights increases in those details that we are anticipating. So I'll give you a second.
Thank you.
To give that. While she's handing them out, what I would like to indicate for some of the new members that I have not had a chance to get to know personally, that the district attorney's budget is really a bifurcated budget, because all of the assistant district attorneys and the district attorney are state employees, and they're paid at the state, not by county. This occurred back in 1990, I believe, was the time that we transferred from the county general fund to the state. So most of you may be familiar with that. So what you're getting is really the bricks and mortar and all of the other amenities that the district attorney's office has. The biggest item, obviously, is the county personnel expenses for our clerical victim witness programming. Our victim witness program is a reimbursable program. It's based on the total amount of monies that are received from surcharges at the state level and then reimbursed. That's the lesser of our budget presentation tonight, but I'm pleased to report that in the previous years there was a lesser amount of reimbursement. Generally, it was at 50 to 51% reimbursement rate. Last year, it fell down to 46, but the prognosis is with some changes that our victim witness reimbursement program should be on target and should be reimbursed back to the over 51, 52% that had been the situation in previous years. So we're pleased to hear that. I will defer any of the specific line items to Laura, but the one topic I'd like to discuss with you briefly is I hope that all of you did receive, and I sent to Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rose, and others, I hope that you received a little bit of, I call it a position paper, if you will, with regards to a position that we're asking as a contract investigator position in the district attorney's office. May I ask, Mr. Chairman, did you receive yours?
Yeah.
Did everyone else receive it? I won't take up your time, because if you've had the chance to read it, my purpose in seeking these funds is basically to provide us the resources to be a truly independent district attorney's office. If you had a chance to review the material, what I mean by that is that we are dependent, totally dependent on law enforcement to do all the investigation. And there are many occasions when we need to have somebody that would be disassociated necessarily with the law enforcement agencies. And I believe that the district attorney's office has an ethical and moral obligation, if not a requirement by the American Bar Association, to provide independent investigations and follow-up if the law enforcement agencies are not able to do that or if there's some deficiency. That's the primary goal. As a practical matter, there's some programming things that I think are important. Every day in this business, we need things that need to be done immediately and timely. Utilizing my resources to do that, where I should be utilizing an investigator in our office. Our office is the largest law enforcement office, a lawyer's office in the county. And we need the appropriate resources and tools to do our job. I gave you a little bit of the history and the bio of that programming, but there are so many it's a multifaceted things that need to be done, but in particular, and services that can be provided by an investigator that works under my authority. One of the primary concerns is about 5 years ago, we entered into a private arrangement with a company to do our worthless check diversionary program. And that program has worked very well. And what it did is it took the bulk of the investigations that law enforcement were doing and channeled them over to our office and went to this entity that was providing a deferred prosecution program, which involved the training, some education, a restitution to victims. It estimated between 300 to 500 cases on an annual basis that had been routed. It took a lot of pressure off law enforcement not to have to deal with those lesser type cases. Misdemeanor worthless checks and worthless check cases don't rank as high as identity theft, robberies, rapes, and murders. And so they've always kind of fallen to the lower level of an investigative totem pole. And so law enforcement was very excited and supportive that we were able to take those cases and divert them, try to get restitution, and work through the program. A year and a half ago, our program provider changed some gears and now put that responsibility to do the review of all these cases back in our lap. And it's my hope that with an investigator, I can now assign an investigator as opposed to a clerical person to make a more thorough review of these worthless check cases to see if they're appropriate for diversion, whether or not they should be appropriately charged out. And so my goal is to put this investigator as a person oversight of our worthless check program. Consistent with that, in our revenue line item, the state law provides that the prosecutor that has such a program can charge a small service fee. And so it would be my intent that if we're able to generate this position, get funding for this position, that we would assess a small service fee to run this program with the oversight of our investigator, and therefore there would be a revenue line item. It's a small amount. We're expecting maybe $25 to $30 surcharge for anybody that goes into this restitution program, and we quote about $5,000 in as an estimated amount. We estimate about 300 cases a year that are in this diversionary program. We also expect that if we do a better job of our screening and reviewing by an investigator, many of those cases may end up going into the system. Some of them will go into the system and maybe be diverted out to the county ordinance, thereby increasing potential revenues on the county ordinance worthless check. We have a county ordinance worthless check ordinance that we're not utilizing as fully because we're diverting it into the diversionary program, and if they complete the diversionary program, there's no penalty. The case is dismissed upon restitution. So I'm hoping to do a better job in overviewing and overscreening and screening our restitution, worthless check restitution program. But that's just one part of this whole effort to get an investigator to provide other resources, and I've identified those needs in that position paper. With that having been said, I'm willing to entertain any questions that you may have.
The bad check thing, okay, I know somebody that got a bad check for $400. They filed a complaint with the DA's office. I haven't heard a word since, and it's been a year. So what happens to those?
Okay, well, your point well taken. You filed a complaint with the district attorney's office.
Right.
Normally those complaints we don't investigate, so we would have to defer that back to the law enforcement agency.
And they don't do anything.
Well, I'm not saying they don't do it, but what law enforcement has been doing is they may end up then referring it up to this program that we have, and I, at that point in time, it could get lost in the shuffle. They would do an effort to communicate with the victim and then respond back, and if the person qualifies into the deferred program, they may be in the program trying to make restitution. But
the victim never heard a word since. It's been a year. So.
Did he call back or make any other efforts?
It doesn't do any good.
And this is the sad commentary. It's not just worthless checks. There's a variety of complaints. The average Joe citizen believes that the district attorney's office has its own independent investigator. That's the general public's perception. In fact, the general public believes that all crimes that are committed are reviewed by the district attorney's office. The truth is that's not the case. And the fact of the matter is that there has been some criticisms in the community about the relationship between law enforcement and prosecution. That is that we're birds of a feather in the same camp. And while we work very closely with law enforcement, the ethical standards say that the district attorney's office is a separate independent agency. And I would only say it is somewhat, I'm not saying hypocritical, but maybe not accurate to say that we're completely independent if I don't have the tools to make me independent. So to that extent, one law investigator is not going to change the landscape of what we do in this business with law enforcement. We're still going to continue to work with law enforcement. They're going to work with us, and that relationship is strong and positive. But it does give me the tool to be able to do much better processing of cases, taking statements, working with witnesses, working with complaints that come through the front door, as opposed to doing the proverbial. Mr. Chairman, in all fairness, you sent me a letter last year and said you had a concern over somebody that was in the unauthorized practice of law. I responded to you by email and said, you're right, yeah, there's some concerns here, but I don't have the tools to investigate. That is a highly sophisticated, your average street officer or detective may not be as sophisticated to understand what is it to be accused of the unauthorized practice of law. That even the lawyers may have some dispute over this issue. And I basically, your complaint was heard, but unfortunately not investigated. And I'm of the opinion that with a resource, with an investigator that works closely with our office, that understands the legal principles and what the prosecutor feels is necessary, will do a lot to enhance those type of complaints, provide at least the citizens with some recourse that they're not maybe already getting when they're filing various complaints that are not of the nature that maybe law enforcement will pursue. So I'm optimistic that this will be a benefit to the community, and it makes our office, at least on the face of it, we have a resource to be able to do more independent investigations.
One more question, if sure. I can. How are you going to, you're going to contract for this, I guess?
The contract would be, obviously, the amount of money we're putting in the kitty is not going to be enough. It's not a full-time employee position. There are no benefits. It'll be straight pay. And I'm hoping that there will be some retired detectives who have left the law enforcement community retired that would be interested in coming forth to do those kind of services. There's, you know, law enforcement officers can retire at a lot earlier age than the rest of us that need to continue to work. And so there may be a few folks out in the community that might be willing to do that. I haven't knocked on any doors. Obviously, I have to wait to see if this committee and the county is willing to give me that resource.
And that's a $40,000 item.
Yes.
Phil?
Just want to take a look at page 18. We're looking at the FTEs for DA / victim witness. From 2013 to 2014, we show the same amount, 17.5. Are all these positions currently funded?
Yes.
Okay. In terms of the proposition before us with the DA investigator, where does it show up within this budget material? You said it's $40,000.
It's under other professional services, line item 521900.
Which page are we on?
Page.
I'm sorry, which page?
It's on page 21. It's right on the first. It's the first item there, I think. Wait, let's see.
So that's a.
Yeah, right there. Yeah.
And you had said that you wanted to have someone who had investigative capacity other than just what is currently in place in Kenosha County, is that correct?
It's an enhancement of our services, right. Yes, it's to enhance, not necessarily to take anything away from what's existing.
So is it your proposition you would hire someone who is independent of having been employed in Kenosha County as a sheriff? Are they still eligible? What is your feeling on that?
My hope is that we can tap from within our local resources, but obviously until we fill that position, it would be my call. It would be a position that would have general police powers, and I'm looking towards the officers that have been on either the Kenosha Police Department, Sheriff's Department, or any of our municipal police agencies that would be interested.
They would be your prospective pool.
I'm sorry?
Be your prospective pool from those two agencies.
Yes, great. Locally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Further discussion? Mark?
So if will you, you'll look to contract with multiple investigators potentially?
I don't think I'm going to be able to get multiple. I would like to be able to have somebody that I can train, have become familiar with the position. Right now, given the amount of money that we're asking for, and I might indicate that the county executive pared my request down. I was hoping to be able to get somebody at a reasonable rate for the full year. And with a lesser amount, obviously, I have to come up with a dollar amount that would be commensurate with their experience and hopefully to be attractive to get somebody to come on board. It's a vital position. I'm not interested in somebody that's not going to be with the qualifications. I want somebody that is highly sophisticated, knowledgeable in computer science and all of the technical, because if you can see from my concerns, those white-collar crimes, identity theft, are much more sophisticated today. We need an investigator that is capable of doing that.
So you will establish then the
criteria?
Hourly rate, if you will?
Well, yes. And we've done some checking as to what would be my understanding that the rate for the Kenosha County Sheriff's has a range from 63 to probably 65 or 66,000 for a detective. My thought would be that we'd be in anywhere from $20 to $35 range per hour for a contract investigator. I don't know what the pool is and how much I might have to adjust that. But it's going to be certainly dependent upon the amount of funding that's in the kitty. So if it's $40,000 right now, we'd probably be looking at somewhere between $25 to $35 more. Straight pay.
right, Aaron?
What was it? Oh, go ahead.
I think your proposition's good. You know, have some independence from law enforcement. I think it's a good idea. Do you know the other counties? Are they taking a similar approach? Or
yes.
Okay.
If you know them, I can tell you the counties that do have investigators. By the way, the statute authorizes the county to fund such a position, and it's purely at the pleasure of the county board. Counties that have such positions, Dane County has 3 full-time investigators on their staff. La Crosse has 1. Marathon has 1. Milwaukee has 9 investigators in their office and 1 chief investigator. Outagamie has 1 and a half part-time one. Rock County has 1. Waukesha has 1. Again, the smaller counties probably not have the sufficient funding to be able to support. But we're a very high-volume community here in terms of demographics.
Ron, did you have something?
What was your original request for a full-time person?
$52,000.
That was what you requested to hire somebody on staff?
No, that wasn't for a full-time.
Okay. So what was your original request for a full-time? How much would it cost to fund a position as a county position?
On a full-time basis?
Yeah.
I didn't run that because that was not on the table. Full-time positions were not something that the county executive is interested in, expressing, I think, the same concerns that many of you have, and so that was not even considered.
So the request before us is $40,000 on a contracted position. And that was the executive's recommendation?
Yes.
Further discussion?
One other thing. When you get this, because I'm going to obviously support here today, but when you get this, can you get back to us with some kind of report after 3 months or so as to what you've been doing and what cases you've been?
Absolutely.
Because that would be important to look at that, and if it's something that's going to serve your office and get some of these people who are obviously scamming people out of the bad checks and whatever. And if we know those things, maybe we can look at it next year, maybe. And so
it is my intent. That's why the selection of the investigator is very vital to your information that you need and to our office and the community.
Thank you.
All right, further discussion. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
I just have a question, sir. If this is a retired police officer or someone that comes back, are we liable at all to have full privileges as a employed police?
Excellent question. I shared that with our corporation counsel, and he assures me that contract position is fully covered and would be under the umbrella of contracted positions under the county liability policy.
So
he did not see any problem with the liability issue.
Thank you.
All right, further discussion. So this is part of the budget. You don't have to vote on this independently. All right, is there a proposal? If there's no further
motion
discussion,
approve.
To approve?
Second.
All right, is there further discussion on the motion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you. And it passes.
Relax.
All right, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the human services budget.
Human services won't be so easy.
She's going to walk us through your books.
Okay, probably for the first time in 13 years, we are not last on the
We are not.
So I thank the budget director that he's just left.
Motion to adjust. Motion to adjust the agenda.
Good. No, I didn't wear the earrings because I was too much to focus on the budget, just on the budget.
Gotcha.
Didn't want to distract. And then yesterday, you were provided with our handout, which is another first. So you had a whole banner, I'm sure it's all in memorization. And as promised, we were going to do the third quarter update for you at budget hearing time. So the very first page that's inserted in there, you'll have minutes. Plus, do you have the budget?
No.
The third quarter update? No.
Okay.
So we're working off of this, not the budget book?
It references the budget book, so it has budget for pages.
Thank you.
First pages.
The minutes that are in there is from our joint committee, and also it also references that everything was passed unanimously on the joint committee, Human Services Committee and Human Services Board. The Aging and Disability Resource Board and the Mental Health Committee passed it unanimously, and the Board of Health passed theirs unanimously. So I'll review the third quarter update, and you can see that for September 30th, DADS, or Aging and Disability Services, has reduced their need for levy. We had two very long-term clients, which was unusual in the institutes, and they came out now in the beginning of the third quarter. DCFS, we have a small savings for placements. Health has a small levy savings. The medical examiner is showing an increase in autopsies. We had budgeted, or were reduced at budget time last year to 120, but we're still on track for the 160, it looks like. And then workforce development, we received some additional child support incentive funding that will also carry over in 2014. You'll see that within their division 2014 budget presentation. So with before Brookside, we're showing a levy surplus this year of just under $58,000 so far through September. Brookside is showing $230,000 as their excess. So all in all, it's $392,000 for the end of 2013. The other thing I want to address before I go into the 2014 budget, I believe it was this time last year that Supervisor Molinaro questioned about the health division fees for like the restaurants and the retail food stores and things. And we've been working on it. We've had a couple of meetings with him. And the fees right now for the restaurants are covering approximately 68% or 92% of all their costs with the overhead also, and the retail food stores are 68%. These all fall under a very old ordinance, Chapter 16, that has been on the books for years, and there's always been a maximum of only a 2.5% increase per year. So what we're going to do is propose in, we'll probably start in February, coming before the committees and then to the county board at the end of March, to propose new language for the ordinance so we can play catch up year after year, but and try to cover all of our costs with these fees, and but also to be sensitive to the owners, the retail establishment owners.
So, what are the fees currently, Laurie?
They're all across the board.
Oh, there's a whole variety for each?
Yes, and it's based upon their gross sales. It could be based upon their type of retail establishment. But it's anywhere from the large grocery stores to the little ice cream vendors. And then for the restaurants, it's the large restaurants. So it's, and then small and medium restaurants. So there will be a scale. So we'll come back in February. The license runs through from July 1st to June 30th. So we just finished our June 30th fees. So now that's why we want to get it, the ordinance changed before the next deadline, which is July 1st.
Ed?
How do the churches and the local community feel under that auspice?
There's a community event fee that, mm-hmm. that sells food.
Like for spaghetti dinners,
right.
Fish dinners, and all that stuff that
right.
the parishes put on.
Right, and it's a temporary. It's like a temporary, so it's only good for those certain days.
They actually, what you have is 3 days that are kind of at no cost, and if you go beyond 3 days, then you have to get the temporary license. So anything beyond those 3 days. So the church festivals, generally you don't have to go out and get that temporary license. Mm-hmm. But if you have fundraisers after that that are community-wide events, then you need that type of licensing.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So right. More to come on that subject.
All right. Why don't we proceed with the 14 budget?
Okay. So if we open up and start with the human services overview, we do this for you every year. This year, our levy is going up 1.2% or $149,000. We have our increase in funding on the pie chart below shows our federal and state funding is increasing over 2%. And our need for the levy is decreasing by about 0.5% because of that. The next page does show you a little bit about the whole human services recap. So you'll see in the medical examiner an increase for autopsies of $48,000.
We have a larger out-of-home placement reduction for DCFS for the juvenile out-of-home placements. We have, for dads, three areas that are increasing because of community needs, and it's mental health, the adult protective services, and then the drug court program is the $120,000. Then we have the reduction in state funding for DCFS. Those were that two-year. We had 2 years of $1.5 million helping us out, and the state now is giving us another 2 years, but halving that to $750,000 each year. So that'll end in 2015.
Lori, before we go too far, on the medical examiner increased autopsies, is the autopsy cost the same?
Yes. They stayed the same again for the fourth year.
And the drug court program, and I may be wrong about this, but I thought this was all funded by grant.
If it was a grant, the grant ended the end of August, and we have measurable outcomes, and we want to keep that going. It's the county executive's initiative, and we've asked for that.
So you can't get refunded?
No, they did not re-up it. It was kind of like a pilot, and they did not give us the money. It was from the OJA.
So this 120 is the full cost?
Absolutely, for a year.
Yes. Right.
And then we had some increase in community AIDS allocations. We are very aggressively going after Medicaid reimbursement. Brookside, when I get there, I can show you that they are returning an additional $413 over last year. A lot of that is due from their debt service and other state aid. So I stopped there because this is everything that was carried over from 2013. However, so if we would have just stopped, we would have had shown DHS would have given back levy of just under $200,000. However, you will see that we transferred in from planning and development two sanitarians that now in health, they're going to work with the other sanitarians, and they're going to cross-train so that we have multiple people doing the multiple sanitarian job performances. And then we are taking over the county mailroom services that was currently in IT. So planning and development in IT should have corresponding reductions in their levy when you see theirs.
I don't... Go ahead. Tell me the correlation between mail and human services. I read that and I thought, I don't get it.
Well, we didn't know what the medical examiner correlation was either.
That's even more.
And if that didn't give us the heebie-jeebies then.
I can easily connect those dots.
Yeah. So the county mailroom, we do a lot of mailroom services for our whole building. And it's run by Goodwill, and we do a lot for human services. Because there's a retirement in IT, it just felt like a better fit for more efficiency. And so we've actually started in 2013 with staff over there doing, and we haven't heard any complaints from any other departments. So it's just a continuation. It's more consistent across the whole county this way. And we did have some efficiencies because of contracting versus
Okay.
On the same point, when we're talking about sanitarians, are we talking about a number of FTEs here?
Two.
And for the mail service, is that FTEs or what's that?
No, it's contracted. It's all contracted.
So then you're going to show, at least in the FTEs from 2013 to 2014, two in this particular...
In health.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
So the contract for the mail, is there an added cost to this?
That whole levy, that $193,000, mm-hmm. that takes that in other areas of the mailroom. You'll see it. I have it separated in a special business unit. It's in central services. The first division.
Is that contracted for the mailroom? Is that just one person?
Yes.
How do they? So that's just Goodwill runs it, right?
Yes.
So being that mail is every day, you must have to fill in with other people or something?
And that's one of the reasons why we did it, too. It's for backup purposes.
Yeah.
Because our staff at Human Services then can go, whoever does the mail in our building, can go over there and fill in when there's vacancy. So that's why it was more consistent.
There's your answer.
Medical examiner is a circle of life thing. I got that.
Yes. You don't do your job in medical examiner.
This is the circle of information.
The mail I didn't get.
That's why I'm asking.
can't say it while the press is here.
All right, let's proceed with the budget. We've got
Okay, Office of the Director. We have just a slight decrease of FTEs there, and I know I'm only going to go through some highlights, and that was because we knew that there was going to be one clerk that was going to retire in February, so that we had budgeted that way. And then down below we had an increase in a building rental for this, but that was because we moved clerical staff from other divisions into this division. And we did that during the 2013 process. So all in all, they have Office of the Director showing a 1,353 decrease in levy need. Central Services, the next one, is the one where you'll see the county IT manual services. Very first page, though, is what we do at the job center. There is just a change, and all it is moving. There's a $20,000 increase for contractual and a $20,000 decrease, and we're just moving those two line items. Then you'll see $159,000 under grants and contributions increase, $159,540, and we move that because we move the general reception staff from workforce development. So when we get to workforce development, you'll see the decrease there. So it's just moving amongst the divisions. And down below on line 10, you'll see our revenue charges. And our revenue charges are for our outside partner agencies. And the rental income went up $61,858. And that was because now we have the new W-2 agency in our building. So that's strictly res care. And there's no levy in this section of Central Services. But the next page is our new business unit for the county IT mailroom services. So we have postage of $140,000 that we transferred, supplies $39.70, and then we actually transferred for $50,000 for the mailroom services. So all in all, it's $193,970, and that levy was transferred.
Salary, the $50,000?
Yeah, it's part of, it's that, and then part, oh yeah, because she's not real full-time over there, so we're sharing that cost with ours, with our side. So you should see that that's the only levy increase with the 193. And keep in mind it's contracted staff, so it is smaller. For workforce development, the next one, we had, again, some, we knew that by the end of March 31st this year that we were going to have three office associates and one office support worker removed, so that all in all is the 1.0 FTE subtracted. Now, under salaries, we have a net salary increase and staff increases for the current staff. We have $35,000 for overtime increase, and ACA is the Affordable Care Act implementation. And right underneath that is the temporary salaries for 11 LTEs, meaning limited term employees. We actually received 100% funding more in income maintenance to supply for, you know, to help with the offset of the increased need for this ACA implementation. The marketplace, or whoever you want to call it. And it started, so we did 11 LTEs right now. And during 2014, as we see the rise of people coming in, and we still have to have them for eligibility, it's our economic support workers that do the eligibility for them, for anybody that comes in, if they're going to be eligible for Badger Care or if they're going to be eligible for the marketplace. So anybody who comes through the door, which we have we're seeing an increase in that, then once we find out the level, we may or may not come back and ask for a couple more full-time economic support workers. But we're going to wait and see what our volume is coming through the door.
So these 11 people are fully funded by
federal? Fully funded by the additional income maintenance that we received.
From the federal government, you mean?
Yeah, well, it's a pass-through from the state.
Over and above the $750,000, or included in that $750,000?
The $750,000 is for DCFS.
Okay.
That 331 is when the enrollment expires for is that what the 331 date is enrollment expires for for Obamacare or whatever you want to call it?
No, the March 31st, that was this year, 13.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I guess I didn't see.
Yeah, that was this year. Yeah. Okay. And we knew they were 100.
All right, I guess I, because I know that expires, that has to end up.
It's actually, you have, yeah, I think they extended a little bit more, but it's for January 1st for the enrollment, but they're starting now.
I heard a figure of March, or I heard a figure through March or something for that, didn't I?
I don't.
Oh, maybe not.
I think
okay.
It's that big.
So when you say that you're going to see how this goes, and then you may come back and ask for additional full time over and above these 11, who's going to pay for that?
Well, we have funding through 2015 on this, okay. So that's what something we have to look at. And it's because it's income maintenance, we get 50 cents on the dollar. So you're not paying 100% for somebody; you're only paying what we would. Put 50 cents levy, 50 cents federal. That's our funding source for this.
Well, that's state?
Federal.
I think we ought to be awfully careful when that time comes.
And we will. I mean,
50 cents on the dollar is still 50 cents
right.
on the dollar for full-time employees.
That's
that you
why
ultimately.
We didn't add anything right now because we have enough. We may get 300 or we may get one coming through the door. You know,
sure.
We don't know at this
okay.
point. So
thank you.
Then line six, they have a decrease in their occupancy costs. We moved the general reception staff to central services. I had just said that earlier in the last section. There, for number seven, we have two new items where we have the food stamp, we offset the client work program benefits. That's starting next July 1st, and that's fully funded. It's a new revenue stream. And then the next one is when we moved the general office reception staff to central service. So that was already done in the previous division. The next tip shows the revenue for workforce development. And I have it boxed where we have an error in our page on the budget book, and I'm going to request this change. And as you can see, that it's on page 178, and all of this money is under the DSS special revenues. It's $1,094,692, and there's nothing on the lines below it. So what happened is that everything got rolled up to that line. So all we're requesting is to change the lines in black there in your book, and it does even out. So that would be one request that I would ask that you accept.
Would you repeat that, please?
Sure. See that black box?
Yes.
So it goes in 442990, that object code, you
okay.
have in your budget book $1,094,692. It's in the notes.
Yeah.
So I am proposing to move that to 260 and add the following three line items because those are all zero in your book. So the 481902, the 297799, and the 54991. And all of those equal then the $1,092,000.
What page?
Page 178. And it's under object code 442999. When it got printed, it just got rolled up into the one, and it should have been split out. So it looks like one's got a really major increase, and then there's no funding for the other three below it. So that one that says $1,094,692 needs to be changed accordingly to this page in the book.
Question, Lori, at the first page that you stopped at. At seven, where you talk about grants contributions, are these increases, are these county levy dollars, or are these funding from some federal or state source?
The FSET, you'll see, these are the expenditure page, so
yes,
you'll see the corresponding
that.
Revenues on the next page for the 370.
So the 374, is that fully funded?
Yes.
That's what I want. $45,200, is that fully funded? Or
yes, we got more child support money.
And the $52,148, is that fully funded by some
Yes, I mean, these are just small increases that have come through. You'll see totally that this division has a negative levy of 4.
No, I do see that, but the question still remains, are these funded or not?
These
particular items.
These particular items would be. It's just salaries that we do a 50-50 split on sometimes with the income maintenance. We usually have funding for all of those. So I can point out the The new FSET and the new child support state incentive money is increasing. And then here's $768,583 for the PPACA, which is the Affordable Care Act money. And again, all the money is probably about a little over $1.2 million, but it's spread over 2 years of funding from the July to June state funding year. So with the additional revenue, because when we got that additional revenue, that's 100% funding, we didn't have to manage that for that. So we were able to save some costs, like for building occupancy charges and for overhead and things like that. So we were able to show a net levy surplus then of 401,545 for this division. And keep in mind, this is all rolled up for one large human services levy.
You didn't have to match on the Affordable Care Act dollars,
nope.
You're saying?
It's all funded. We have no levy in that program.
Be the same way in 15?
Maybe going to be here in 15.
Hey, don't you worry about where I'm going. Will it be the same way in 15?
Let's see, am I going to be here in 15?
I've got a few months to work on changing that. I guess my point is, you know, I don't think the county should have to match anything.
No, if it's absolutely needed, we will show the need and we will show how we can fund it.
Well, make a note that implementation of the Affordable Care Act should come from the federal government, not local government. So if there's any proposed match, whether I'm here or not, I'd recommend we reject that.
I understand.
Thank you.
Veterans Services, right?
Veterans. Not much here. You know, in 2013, we had $2,000 for the World War II monument, so now that's coming back. There is a change in the FTE. The senior office associate that was there retired, so we rehired a person at a lower pay scale. And we reclassed in your 15S, I think it's that page in your book, we reclassed the deputy veterans officer to a non-classified assistant veteran services officer. There's no salary adjustment. He's been there forever, and so he's at the high end of the scale. So there's no salary adjustment, just a title. Other than that, they're showing a return of 35-45. Our favorite, the medical center.
So on the veterans, there's nothing here for a veterans court as you showed in the drug court?
No.
That's still grant money?
Yes. And that's received. Received as that money.
That's a Kenosha.
We don't have it.
It's one of those cooperative shared deals.
How many Kenosha people are in that court?
I don't know. I'm not reporting on veterans court.
I don't know. I think it's just a small handful still. I don't have an exact number.
Could you give us that
for you?
Yeah. All right. You want to proceed?
Okay. So we always give you these charts. And so the chart still shows, it shows actuals for a whole year of 10, 11, and 12. And this is 2013 year-to-date through like 9 months, through September 30th. So you can see already the purple line for this year is we are really close to the actuals of the year before. Specifically for homicides, we're one up already from the total from last year.
This is through when?
September 30th.
It's the animals.
And then we always break down the accidental between motor vehicle, drug overdose, and other. And everything that's on these charts, the statistical data is on the next page. So if you wanted to know anything in detail.
And are all of the autopsies that are being done required?
Yes.
Mandated somehow through some?
Yes. If the manner of death cannot be determined, that is what the autopsies are for. And again, Milwaukee County, $1,200, all-inclusive rate. And that has not changed ever since we started. They have kept it the same. And when I say all-inclusive, I'm talking about an autopsy assistant, I'm talking about x-rays, I'm talking about dental record checks, blood samples, lab, other lab things, so tissue samples, everything. And that's an all-inclusive rate.
So the 13 numbers here are part of the year as compared to a full year, is that
right?
Through September 30th.
One question. As far as other counties our size, are we on average what the amount of autopsies we're doing here with other counties of our size, or are we more or less? Or?
Well, you know, it's really hard to
I know you like talking about the subject, but I just brought
it
up.
But it's really hard to compare because, like, for example, we have the medical examiner, others have a coroner. Some people are using, you know, I mean, it's hard to tell between counties. There's different varieties. So the number of autopsies done,
but
never really
an autopsy is an autopsy is an autopsy, regardless of who.
Yeah, I.
If you're telling me that every autopsy that we do is required or mandated,
yes,
somehow, then whether we have a coroner or a coroner or a medical examiner shouldn't change that number, right?
Well, it is a judge. It's not that cut and dry.
Yeah.
There is a judgment factor.
Now you're getting to my point.
Yeah, there is a judgment factor.
And my point
that point was made last year.
Yeah. So are we making a judgment? You know, are the judgments that are being made driving these numbers higher?
Well, that's a point of argument. I mean, one could argue both sides of that. I say that's a judgment call.
Yeah, we get pretty good numbers that argue a pretty strong case that something's slightly out of whack, if nothing else. What do you say?
On the flip side of that,
I think we have to have more facts.
Yeah, our medical examiner is going by best practice in her field, and she certainly could appear in front of this committee and justify why she made the decision to have that autopsy occur on that body. And in my conversation with her, it seems like nothing out of the ordinary that she isn't requesting it on a case that is easily determined. It's those that, as Lori pointed out, that the manner of death is...
It's the suicides that are rising. It's the drug overdoses that are rising in this community. I don't know if you're seeing that in other communities. I mean, this is why we're tracking this information, is because of the rise in autopsies. And actually, by the end of 2010, we had 180 autopsies. So it's not rising; it's down from the 2010. And then we had a person; we had a doctor. Okay.
Any further? I mean, if the committee certainly wants the medical examiner to come here, we during budget time or some other time, we can do that.
So what do we have in the budget for number of autopsies for next year?
What?
48 higher than the prior year.
No, it's 120 and it's $48,000, yes.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. But it's 40 more. Okay. But we're at that right now.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we're paying it now in this year. And we paid it in 2012, too. So... I don't want to shortchange it again in 2015.
Okay, thank you.
So, actually, that is the largest line, is the pathology fees, which is the increase in autopsies. We have under fixed charges, the hospital lease increase for next year of $4,140. Under line 9, the reason that the machinery equipment is nothing for this year is because we had a grant, and so we are not requesting anything for next year for the capitals. Mm-hmm. The next page shows our medical examiner fees. And we are not proposing to increase an individual fee, but we are increasing the quantities. So you can see in red on the right-hand side under the 2014 proposed, the signing of the death certificates, we're getting a lot more of those requests. and the cremation permits. It's a sign of the times where it's cheaper for cremation.
You know, the pathology fees here, you put down $192,000. Does that strictly goes to the Milwaukee County Medical Examiner? That doesn't include the cost of transport back and forth from Connecticut?
No, we have transport time, which is the person who's actually transporting, and that's under our salaries and benefits.
Okay.
No, that is just the fee we pay to Milwaukee. No?
So is is there more transport time as a result of going back and forth to Milwaukee?
More than what we had budgeted, because it's 160 rather than 120.
So you're going back and forth more times?
Right. We are using our own vehicles.
Is he just in the carpool?
Did he just say carpool?
Well, you're the guy with the...
Can they use a carpool lane if they have a deceased?
Yeah, just better set them up.
So really the levy increase has a lot to do in the medical examiner with the increase fees. The next division is health, and this is where you're going to see the two... Oh.
Can we go back to the... You just want increased fees. It's really increased...
Quantity.
But so
increased fee revenue.
Have we looked at the fees?
Yes, and they are comparable to what other counties have. We actually did a survey on that.
Thank you.
So for health, you'll have some highlighted areas there, and the yellow highlights indicate the transfer of the sanitarians from the planning and development area. So there is the 2.0 additional environmental sanitarians and the FTEs. And then down below, you'll see the salary and benefits associated with that, the $213,155. And then below that yellow highlighted, is these are the position reclassifications that are on your page 15S. So there's four public health sanitarians moving from NRB to NRC. A sanitarian that's moving to a lead sanitarian, and then our environmental manager moving from NRB to NRF. And then you have another highlighted down below for the motor vehicle maintenance is, again, for the additional environmental staff. These were all line items that we inherited from planning and development and sanitarians.
The environmental staff in your office, in your building then?
Yeah.
So they have transferred. So will there be an opportunity then long term to, you've got two sanitarians, two, or how many health inspectors do we have?
There'll be four and then Mark, right? Yeah.
So five plus two is seven. Mm-hmm. Is there?
No, we'll have five altogether. With them. Because we have three.
Including the two sanitarians.
I think, yeah, we have two in addition to downtown.
Right. Which is. Three,
so it's five. So my question is, long term, is there an ability to, I'm assuming they're sharing some of their
responsibility? Absolutely. You'll see some increase in staff development, and everybody's going to learn all the sanitarians are going to be able to cross-train. So not only will they be doing the septic tanks out there, but they'll be doing also the, in the city.
So over time, can we reduce that staff? Do we, I mean, is it a...
We have
one.
Oh, over time.
Over time. Two words. Over time.
You and I are not. That's my earrings. You know, I believe there might be a requirement, but I'm not sure.
It all depends also on the growth of the community, because if things continue to open up and new places or new businesses starting up, that'll also take their time. So it's kind of a balance.
I would hope there'd be some efficiencies that we'd see by bringing them under the same
definitely some cross-training
roof. So
the next page shows a couple of more highlighted areas, yellow highlights. And that, again, is the move. And we, under the Section 7, under grants, contributions, under purchase services, there's a large increase of $236,000. We became the regional fiscal agent for women's health programs, which is really the reproductive health programs. And we were only three agencies in the region, and now they've given us two more. So this is the funding for the other two regions. So you'll see a corresponding revenue for that. The next page shows their fees, and last year we went to a fee based upon poverty level, upon the federal poverty level, on income limits, and that's updated every year. So this is the new one that's going to be effective January 1st. And then the next page shows the fees that we're charging. The only ones we're increasing at this point is the urine analysis. This is for the public walk-in, and reproductive health kits with the medications. Those are just slight increases on there. So the revenue on the next page for health, again, it shows the revenue portion of the planning and development of $44,200. That was their fees that they were collecting from the community. You'll see the expansion of
homes. I got a question on the poverty levels. Mm-hmm. Something like food stamps, is that 100% of poverty? Is that what that is? Like a food stamps eligibility, is that 100% of poverty or what? Your group, that's family size, right?
This is gross income.
Okay.
So income limits for a family.
Like for a, and that's the 958 is.
That's monthly.
Monthly, okay.
Yeah.
So that like that stuff like food stamps, that's 100% of. What is food stamp? Where do they drop in as far as how much percent of poverty that they're eligible? 125,
100? It was a 133. I don't know if that continues.
Oh, okay. So it's higher than 100. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I didn't understand. Okay. So on the revenue page under section 11, we have that large, right in the middle of the page, the increase of $280,181. And again, that was that regional women's health programs that we got increased for. And the second to the last is our City of Kenosha contribution, which is going up 0.27% or $83,148. So as I did for the department, I did this for health as a recap. So what with the levy transfers, they actually are showing an increase of $75,955, but they had the transfer in, that's including the transfer in of $154,000. So if we had not had that, they would have shown a return of $78,070. Aging and disability services. Usually we give you charts like this, but it's only showing the month. We've changed these charts now to show the trend over the years. We thought this was more informative for all of our committees. So the very first chart has the admissions, hospitals, institutes, and care centers. So the blue line are the hospital admissions over the years. And keep in mind, this 2013 estimate is through, again, through August numbers. We didn't have September numbers when we did this. The care center is rising. The hospitals are kind of sitting around the same area as 2012, and our institutes. And again, the institutes are showing on the second graph right next to that, the number of days, the average length of stay. The institutes in the center box, again, showing 9.9, the average length of stay, and it's because we have those two very long-term people from, it started at the end of last year, and they are out now in the third quarter, in the very beginning of the third quarter. They're no longer in the institute, so it's kind of an outlier for us. And then the number of emergency detentions, and those are pretty much the hospitals. And again, we work with emergency rooms and the law enforcement. Our crisis staff works with them to bring those to placements that are at the best for them. The next page, we thought we'd share our crisis contacts within the community going up and the jail assessments. And what everybody's been waiting for is our terms page. We kind of speak in acronyms a lot. And this was prepared for one of our committees, and I thought it should go out to everybody. So this is really good if you're hearing a term or something. This is a definition that I think is going to be helpful.
Question?
Yes.
On crisis contacts, the preceding page, what does that involve? Is that person to person? Is that telephone? How is that defined?
Yes.
Person
to person, telephone.
What else? What else goes into that? Just those two categories?
I think that would be the majority of that. Walk-ins, I mean, anything like that.
So just in terms of the crisis contacts, is there a dedicated number of FTEs that you have to work with these contacts and develop? I mean, can you detail us on that, or where would we find that in the budget book?
It's a purchase service.
It's contracted out.
It's contracted out with KIDS, Connection Human Development Services.
Okay.
They've got our crisis line forever, both juvenile and adult.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Where did we add the three positions last year that generated so much debate?
Our ESS workers,
workforce development.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How's that working?
It's working well. They're meeting their performance goals on the telephone. I mean, it's really helped. And working with, because, you know, that's the consortium that we joined the precinct.
Yeah, I think we were like 9 out of 10 counties when we came in front of you, and 9's not a good number in that case, and got it down to where we were one of the top 3 or 4 counties the last time I looked at the stats. So that really has improved our performance in many areas of the measure of some.
Ed?
What's the average wait time now? I know before it was extremely high.
Yeah, it was now double digit before. I don't know what the latest number was, but I know we had that down earlier this year to just a couple of minutes.
And then we're like, we move from 9 to 2nd or 3rd, yes, correct, with this implementation as 3 individuals?
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. I have a question on the crisis contacts. Saw that chart going way up. Does that have anything to do with the crisis intervention training that we did with our police?
Everyone says,
yeah. Is that figuring for there?
I think it certainly helps in community awareness and how they're approaching folks and how they're dealing with issues that pop up. Yeah, but I don't know if that's driven that spike. I just think more people are in searching for need and help and different mental health issues that are popping up across our county.
And I would think that the more use of the care center, which is a lot, you can see on this chart, the care center is about $310 a day. The institutes range from $1,000 to $1,300 a day, and the hospitals are $650 a day average. And so the care center, which is our least expensive setting, with the CIT training that we're doing, I think it's helped to learn and have everybody understand what's available here in the community rather than immediately put them into a hospital or an institute setting.
Okay.
All right, what's next?
Aging. Aging has, the only thing is the FTEs have not changed, but in this year, remember, we moved the senior account position to a fiscal manager position, and that was happening this year. The large increase for the supply changes, $25,897, that's all grant funded. So that's the reason that's been increased. We have a new behavioral health treatment grant that was approved this year that's being carried over in 2014.
Why do you have staff development under supply changes increase of $9,382?
It's the behavioral health treatment grant that we got. It's
mm-hmm.
being grant funded.
But it's staff development, but you've got under supplies.
Because it is in the supply category.
I guess I asked.
Al said.
So what is that? What does that provide? Obviously, you've got some.
Yeah, it's for the behavioral health treatment grant. It's for the people who are involved in that grant, especially like the judges and everything, that they go through these best practice trainings, and that's the staff development. And the grant pays for that. Under the grants and contributions, the next page, there's a highlight. There's a couple of things. A while back, a few years back, we received a very generous donation from somebody in the community. And
Max Kulik. Does that sound familiar?
No, and that's I can't tell you the name of the one.
No, that's a different one. I remember the one, though.
That was Brookside.
Yeah, that's right, Brookside. Yeah, that was a Russian, you left his estate to the county. Yeah.
But this particular wanted to remain anonymous, but you did give money, and you did approve that a while back, but we never had a budget or line item for it. So now I'm including a new line item for the expenditure of these trust funds, and then you'll see in the revenue, you'll see these corresponding revenue coming in. The grant for behavioral treatment grant, that's in here, and then the crisis intervention is down below the 37509. We also had a CIT training grant that's paying for those funds for the crisis intervention training that we're doing in the community. And then here is the drug court treatment grant. And just to give you a couple of ideas, we've had in 2013 we've had about 25 participants. The UAs or urine analysis has shown a 95% sobriety rate.
Bless you.
65% of the participants have avoided jail. 3 babies were born drug-free. 10 are now employed. 4 are in school. 3 have the are taking part in the W-2 program. And we had one on the Dean's List at Gateway. And 9 have graduated and 6 have full-time employment. So that's why I want to keep the 100%.
Question?
No.
Second from bottom, care center. You've got the line item. 231, 451. Details, care center, what does it do? Where is it located physically? I'm just not familiar with that.
Sure. The care center is located 5th Avenue and 65th. It's the original
Kenosha
Hospital that the Episcopalian Church owns and has leased to kids for years. It's an older home right on the corner.
So just north of Cammie.
61st, is it? Yeah. Yeah, 61st Street and 5th Avenue.
Okay.
And it is a short-term stabilization, generally 2 to 3 days for people who are having mental health issues and other alcohol and drug-related problems that don't require hospitalization. So we use it as when you get called to the hospital or you're intervening with somebody who's in crisis and you determine it isn't safe to put them back home right now, we would put them in a care center for a day or two, stabilize them, hook them back up with services, and then monitor them from there.
And that is how long we've been involved with that type of facility?
I've been around since 89, I think.
Oh, so it's been a rather long-term thing. Okay. That's my question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Since the 1970s, that's been organized.
Really?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, so revenue changes are on the next page. And you can see the 2 new grants, $116,233 was the Behavioral Health Board grant and Crisis Intervention Training grant. The trust funds.
How many in that Behavioral Health Board?
I'm sorry?
How many in that Behavioral Health Board?
Just at the bottom, you'll see Human Services Reserve, but that's that trust fund. That's the one that's highlighted. Trust fund donation, and that's just human
service. You spend the interest or you spend the capital out of that too?
Everything. It's not accumulating any interest.
It's not, okay. So it's?
It's just the donation.
Spend it until it's gone.
So pretty much this particular division, we are increasing it, and a lot has to do with the mental health and IOTA programs, and then the $120,000.
This report is a couple months old, but it looks like they were anticipating 4 admissions at the beginning within the first 3 weeks, and then they anticipated another 3 additional by early August, so I don't have any numbers.
This just started. This just started.
I know that.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. And we'll be reporting on all the grants. We do that for you and send out that report. That'll be part of it. Children and Family Services. You can see our placement chart. We are really close to budget. We're running very close, which is a good thing. The next page shows you that Our days of care in the green section this year, budgeted to actual, are being reduced, and our average daily rates for all of these placements are being reduced. So you'll actually see in the 2014 budget that we have a expected savings of just under $270,000 for next year. Which is on the next page under section 7, where it's got $269,618 negative increase there.
What's accounts for the daily rate decrease?
It's the ACE. It's the ACE 180 program that we were given permission to start, and we started. We didn't have a full year this year, and that's a much lower rate.
Corrections.
So that's gotcha.
So those people are at the Racine Detention Center?
Correct. That's where they run the ACE 180.
And what is their contract price?
They are $160 a day. I think it was about $160 a day versus corrections, which is $280, $290 as it works its way up.
But the ACE program has the services attached to it.
Correct.
Where the corrections didn't have the intensive services.
They are a little, yes, they take longer time to put things in order for you.
Without the care.
Or question. Same page that we're looking at, third item from the bottom, COM-based delinquency contract. We're up $15,000 for increased gang diversion programming. Is that a contracted entity where we're asking?
This
Describe
is, it's a program that we started this year, and it's working out. It's just an increase in the whole gang diversion program area, and it's really with the Boys and Girls Club. And we've been working on different programs, and it's keeping the kids.
Okay.
But it's with the Boys and Girls Club. Okay. And then two items down from that, where it says $226,550, it's the increase for Comprehensive Community Services program. That's the CCS program that we started with adults and dads a long time ago. And it's really working, and they've now opened that up for the children. So we're working on that to get that going as of January 1st, and this is our expected revenue for that. So I tell you, we're aggressively going after Medicaid for all of our prevention services. So on the revenue side, on the next page, you'll see some minor increases and decreases at the top. The Healthy Families Program grant, that's what came in during this year, $119,267. And then here is we had $1.5 million in the 2013 budget for the state funding, the GPR, and so we're reducing that now in half to $750,000. And that'll take us through all of 14 and all of 15. And then this 300, we have the new line item, the Comprehensive Community Services revenue, the Medicaid program. That's what we are expecting for revenue. So everything included, this division is also up $324,665. Keep in mind, we are all of levy for the whole department is one levy. And we just cut off the press. We were so excited that we just got notice that we are receiving a grant called the Post Reunification Support Program from the state. It's state funded through DCF, and it begins January 2nd, and we just got notice late last week. So I am asking that we add an additional line item for this. It's all funded through the state, and it's to provide services to support families that had children in the foster care, and they are now with their birth parents, and so it's giving us time to be more monitoring them and to give them more intensive services to keep them with their birth parents. So I am asking for a budget book request change for $100,000 for a new business unit, and then a corresponding $100,000 for the revenue from the state so that we can start this program January 2nd. So when you
That's a flat grant, huh?
Yeah, and it is. And it's specifically for that. And it's supposed to serve, we could serve like a maximum of 36 children. And it's approximately, the state's estimating about $1,000 per child per month.
Do they put a time limit from January to sometime? Did you have to spend it or what?
No.
No, it's open-ended.
Yeah.
Right now.
Okay, so yeah. When it's gone, it's gone.
So from a staffing standpoint, how is that handled? In-house or contracted?
Contracted. We're going to use our existing contracted staff.
Our social workers will manage the cases internally and then use our existing service pool to plug the families. Okay.
So what's the committee's desire on that?
You need a motion?
We do.
Well, there's two changes, so I didn't know if you wanted
to. One is revenue and one is...
We got another change.
The other one was just a budget book error change that for workforce development, but this
well,
is.
Well, I want to do these separately.
Do you want to do this as you go along, or do you want to wait until
no,
end?
No, I think we should do it right now.
I'll make a motion to accept $100,000 in revenue and $100,000 in expenditures, with the caveat that, of course, should be funded.
All right, and what is the name of this again?
Post Reunification Support Program.
For the post reunification support program, with the caveat, of course, that the funding decreases, then the positions go away.
I'll second that.
All right, is there a discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. This way we can start right away.
All right, what's next?
Brookside Care Center. So we give you the census page every quarter. And as you can see, Brookside Care Center is still over their Medicare budget. They were at 33, and we're approximately running 38.8 through the end of September. Medicaid was budgeted 88, and we're at 80. And remember, Medicaid is the one that we lose money on every day. Medicare is what we are adding to our bottom line. And then the private pay is meant to break even. We budgeted 30, and we're at 29.6 average. So we're right there. We have a 98.3% occupancy rate through September, and that's amazing for a nursing home. And then we thought we'd give you the admissions and discharges over the years, and you can just see how, by month, over the years, they're just rising. So, and it's the Medicare census that are driving a lot of the admissions and discharges. Although, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of our older Medicaid patients. But we're still at over half of the Medicaid population in the county. So for Brookside Care Center, we do have some FTE changes. We are hiring a nursing clerical support worker. We are. It looked like we had budgeted one LPN position more than what we're actually using, but we. So we're deleting that position and we're adding additional CNA shift hours. Remember, in 2013 budget, we were talking about the reorg. So the next two line items take care of that for 2014. And we had an activity director in 2012 that had been a county FTE forever, and so when he left in the middle of the year, we contracted for that position to finish it, and so now we're putting it back in, so as a county FTE position.
Question. Yeah. Here's a question,
Lori,
here.
Yep.
How are we doing on staffing there? Are we having any problems filling some of those positions because salaries were a little bit different than?
Who's... No.
How are we doing with that? Good?
Anyways, at the monthly trustee meeting, they go over the vacancies that are available, and they're very minimal now. It's
not
really worked well. Yes, it has really worked well.
CNAs included?
Yes, the RNs, LPNs, and CNAs review that every month with the trustees, and it's minimal now, the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So why are you returning the activity director to a county employee from a contracted position?
This position has become more of a management staff position now, and they actually supervise all the activity aides who are county positions. So it just was a short fix as an interim because we weren't even sure what we wanted to do, what Fran wanted to do with the activity department at that point. So now we've made that decision, and it just happened that it missed a budget cycle.
Okay. So is that same cost, more, less?
Yes. I mean, well, it's increased because it was contracted previously, but there's a corresponding decrease in the contracted area.
So it washes out, kind of, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a slight increase. It's a little bit more for...
Well, how much?
A county. It's, I had it here. Oh, it's the total for all of those. That one probably is about $5,000 to $6,000 more in salary and benefits.
Is there a letter grade associated with that position?
Yes. It's probably in your 16S budget. I didn't have it in here.
On 16
minutes. Is it 15S? It probably says it. I know.
Brookside. Activity director. Activity aid.
Director.
Director, NRC, C.
C, okay. And that was where it was before.
Okay.
So are we budgeting for 5 new people there for 12 months?
Where do you see 5 new
people? I thought that's what you said.
Did I say that? I'm sorry, then I must have missed. I didn't.
Well, how many are new people there? You've got 2
and... All in all, there's 0.97 with the decreases.
You have one new nursing clerical support worker.
One. A new activity director.
You have
director.
Two, a little over 2.5 custodial staff increase.
But you have to take out the 4.2 decrease in the other area for that. Those are all part of the reorg.
All right.
That would have been laundry, right?
Yep.
And then the activity director. Mm-hmm. And then the audit aid. So you have 3. So 2 of them are full year and 1 is not. Is that correct? Any else? Angie?
I have one. You said that you lost some long-term. Okay, so it went from the 88 budgeted down to 80. And I know we're busy with the time was, but those numbers next year going to go back up? Are you going to stay at 80?
I don't know.
You're going to stay long-term at 80, decrease by 10%, and you're going to stay at 80.
Yeah. Remember in Medicaid, well, a lot of our Medicare patients come in, love it, stay, and they go on, and some of them become Medicaid.
Okay, so for next year, we'll be thinking of 80 long-term.
Yeah, I'll show you. When we get to the revenue, we'll go through the census mix.
That's true.
Thank you. Yeah.
Anything further?
Well, I guess not.
All right. Do you have anything else to present to us?
For the whole department?
Yes.
I guess not.
No, I'm asking if you do.
Oh, well, for Brookside, I would just like to tell you about the rates, if that's okay for next year. I know I'm probably shooting myself in the
foot. We're giving you a pass now, Charlie. You missed the window.
Yeah, I did. I'm sorry. That's me. So on the page where it's got this comparison of the 2013 nursing home rates, we always do this. We contact the other nursing homes in the area, and everything, our current hard-to-pay rate is $298 a day. And everything that's red are the current rates for the other nursing homes today that are even higher than our current rate. And we are proposing to just go up $2 a day to $300 for our private pay rate, $300 per day. And with that ranking, we're still in the middle. So the next page shows our revenue budget. And our private pay, right now, we're at 29.6, and we're budgeting for 29 next year. So we're going down, just a point. And then for the Medicare, we are running 38.8, and we are budgeting 37. Average. And for Medicaid, we're at 80 and we're budgeting 84. So all of those changes gives us a total increase of $441,000. Now, keep in mind, I'll just go to the little recap then at the box, because there's no levy in Brookside. This is all their operating revenues. So the recap has their debt service returned, because we finished the debt this year. So it was a return of $679,408. But they didn't stop there. They gave back another $106,555. So all in all, their return to the general fund for 2013 is $785,963. Now I'll be done.
What about your capital budget here? You didn't touch on that.
Okay, so the page before that shows what capital items we're buying from operating reserves, or excuse me, operating revenues, but this capital outlay shows what's being bonded for. So the dividers in the Southport room, they're so old and they get stuck and we can't move them anymore. So we're going to replace those. There's a picket fence in the back that is falling down. The negative pressure wound therapy machines we need. There is a meal delivery warming cart service, and then the cafe renovation. We started a new meal pilot program. The cafe, if anybody's ever been there, it's for residents, staff, visitors, anybody who comes into the building can purchase lunches, and it's very good. I highly recommend it. And then for the larger items, the resident room seating, we have not ever replaced any types of chairs or anything within the rooms. So that is for $33,600, and that's going to be over a four-year period. The security system, it says security system, but it's really replacing the hallway cameras and recorders. They're not digital, so we only have like about a 30-day span of memory on the recording of these cameras, so now we want to upgrade that. Resident bathtubs, where I want to put four in. We have seven tubs. The building was built with seven tub rooms, seven halls, and three tub rooms have tubs. The rest have showers. So for the 154 residents, that's kind of hard. So we want to add a tub, and there's plenty of room in each of the tub rooms. And then the rehabilitation and facility improvements, again, that's just looking at the building expansion for the next couple of years. So we put some for fees, for engineering, possibly architectural fees. So we replace those with that.
Detail us on meal delivery warming cart service.
Yes. Some of the meals are being delivered and sitting, and they're not keeping the temperature right. So they're asking for new delivery services, because you know they cook it downstairs and then they bring it up to the different cafeteria in the one, and then the Southport room, because we have another cafeteria on the sleeping hall. And they're just not keeping the temperature right. So they want to replace these with the more modern.
This being an enterprise fund, anything that's not utilized in these capital outlays, this is bonded money, right? Anything that's not utilized, where does the excess go?
Goes back into the capital fund.
Of the general. Brookside?
No.
General, because it's bonded.
Right.
Okay. If anybody has any more questions on Brookside, go ahead. I have just more about the general things. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Okay. You want to say something
the
about
internal service fund hasn't changed. That's our internal service fund for the job center building, and it has not changed.
All right, further discussion?
I'd just like to take a look at page 16S, Department of Human Services. We're looking at the FTEs, and we discussed, I believe, what's going on with the we're up 1.8 FTEs, if I'm doing the math correct. Is that right? For the entire department. 345.21 to 347.01, correct?
All right. Which section are you adding?
Page 16S. Regular budget book.
Oh, 16S.
Yeah, bottom of the page. Human services total. We're down 0.17 office of director. We're up one for, aging and disability? Or excuse me, Brookside. Right. Then children and family services, we're down one. Workforce development, child support, we're up two. So it nets out to 1.8 approximately, is that right?
Well, health is up two.
Health
is the one that's up to, and that's the two sanitariums. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Health is up too. Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. When we look at this 347.01, are all of these FTE positions funded?
Yes.
No, we defunded the the assistant director of human services is still defunded.
Okay, so that
it's still here, but it's defunded.
Okay, so there's a.
That was the Jim Kennedy position.
Yeah, there's a position there, but it's currently not occupied or being funded.
Right.
What are the thoughts on that? What's going to happen with that?
Well, actually, we're looking at in the next year or so, I think another person's going to be retiring out of the office of director. She's a current contract person. So we were going to look at that position and the assistant director, and maybe come up with a hybrid position that will touch a number of different areas. So we're still exploring that as we look at succession.
Those are my questions.
All right, further discussion. Aaron,
I have a question on the Brook side here, second page. The outsourced laundry services, 2013,
oh, yeah.
So about 275.
That was part of the reorg, and so what happened is that we outsourced laundry during this year because we had that new environmental support services request for those employees. So we outsourced the laundry, and so there was a corresponding decrease from the reorg for the employees, but we have... It's $275,000 for the outsource. That's the purchase service, the contracted services amount. And then you can see on the lines, a couple down below where it says laundry supplies and bedding and linens, there is a decrease because we no longer are supplying those. Those are coming from our vendor. So the $13,000 decrease and the $15,500 decrease is also because we no longer have in-house. And our utilities... we're having less electric, gas, and water, but what we did was we took our 2013 utilization and just decreased it a little bit because we weren't sure what the rates were going to be looking like in 2014. Now I've heard electric is coming down. Or gas.
But we're not really seeing the decrease in the payroll because it's other additions you got, basically?
Yeah, no, it's you're seeing it. It's just that if you're seeing between the 2.6 and the 4.2 decrease in the staff.
Okay.
So you have expected savings due to staff changes in 2013 reorg is $85,322. But that plus you have to look at the decreases in the laundry outsourcing
That.
But we gained in the custodial staff area. So we gained a second shift to help with the offset now because Medicare patients are leaving at all hours. So we were paying a lot of overtime to make the room ready for right away in the morning. So now we have a second shift area. And now hospitals will release later, and then people can come in later in the day then. That's why our admissions and discharges are going up. We needed that second shift area.
Further discussion?
Move to approve.
Second. All right. You had another request to amend the budget in what fashion?
It was for workforce development. It's just the line items need to be changed. There's
right.
Zero levy.
Doesn't that need to have a separate amendment here or not?
I think if you make an motion, I'll also include it.
I would make my motion amended to include the previous item correction to the budget as presented.
Second agrees.
Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, it passes.
Thank you.
And I've had a request to take a momentary break, and so we'll reconvene here about 42.
That's a good idea.
And we'll wind up the evening with Public Works. All is well at any rate.